Hi, my name is Henry Zebrowski, executive producer and head superstar of Last Podcast on the Left.
More enthusiasm.
And I want to say, you gotta listen to Wizard and the Bruiser, hosted by Holden McNeely and Jake Young.
It's about
nerds doing what nerds do.
Fandoms,
ahego. He explains the word ahego for several episodes.
Video games, movies.
Holden McNeely's there. Go and listen. It's coming from me, Henry Zebrowski. I'm begging you to listen to Wizard and the Bruiser. You're going to love it.
Just seems like you're making it daunting to them.
There's no place to escape to.
This is the last podcast
on the left.
From your glaze.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
All I'm really saying is that they don't really care about us. That's what this is about, dog. That's what about fucking today's about, dude.
Yeah.
They don't care about us, man. They don't care what fucking happens to us, dude. They want to divide us up for the aliens' dispensation, friend. Dude. Jesus. Fucking two fingers in the air. Two fingers in the air. Like you got no torso and you just don't care. Two fingers in the air.
Peace sign, but with a pinky and a ring finger.
My penis is like a hot dog and I just don't care.
Welcome to the Last Podcast on the Left. Ladies and gentlemen, my name's Marcus Parks. Ooh. I'm with the hot dog penis, Henry Zebrowski.
I can't fold a napkin, but I can disclose the truth to the American people.
I bet he could do more with those fingers than you thought.
Yeah. Not according to Mrs. Schneider.
Well, he was missing the wrong fingers.
Mm-hmm. And I'm also joined by the regular penis, but largely testicled, Ed Larson.
That is accurate as hell.
Man.
I'm the only guy who can titty fuck his own balls.
That'll help the algorithm.
It's horrible. It's horrible.
Horrible.
And on today's episode, we're going to start the first of a two-part series, Aliens Attack.
No! I'm one of you! This is amazing, man. This is we never got to the story incomplete, and now it's time to finally do it. Yes, it's a part of a series of alien attacks, but mm-hmm. we figured that would help the medicine go down.
Yeah, we're going to examine three cases in which extraterrestrials have actually attacked human beings.
Yeah.
These stories involve small-scale skirmishes, accidental injuries, and full-on battles involving green berets, alien greys, and one brave soul named Phil Schneider. And it's with Phil that we'll begin today's episode.
Now, yeah, I know we're going to get into it, but how is an accidental injury war?
It's a lot of accidents. Yeah, it's
how
an attack.
How is it an attack if it's an accident?
Technically, he started the Dulce War.
The Dulce War. All right, let's just start.
Well, the accidental attack is going to... You know what? Fuck.
Hey, man. I feel...
I wrote that wrong. I wrote that bad. Thanks for pointing out my fucking... It's been a long month, man. Fucking Patty Hearst melted my goddamn brain. You're lucky I can put string three sentences together at
this
point.
Well, guess what, man? That type of magnifying glass-like research, the Sauron eye of LPN, is now upon this even more important topic than Patty Hearst. I don't care about the politics involved. Yeah. I don't care about how important the time period was or how important that story was to true crime, to the fabric of the country in general. It's horseshit. Today we're talking about
nonsense.
A man, yeah, who's made out of ice cream that is fighting for the rights of the American citizen. Two fingers off for Phil Schneider. Come on, two fingers up. Also, Phil Schneider, according to the FBI man that he spoke to one time, was called the bravest man to ever live.
Oh, so who was this FBI man?
Oh, his buddy.
Does he have a name?
Governor.
He didn't want to disclose due to the sensitive nature of their friendship.
The untruth of it?
Nope. Phil Schneider's an interesting case.
Now, Phil Schneider is someone that has come up here and there throughout the years on Last Podcast, but he is particularly attached to the deep underground military base known as the Dulce facility near Los Alamos, which was, as we all know, the site of the Manhattan Project.
So it's a real place, it's a real city, and aliens work inside of there making chimichangas. for the local displaced.
They like chili burgers there.
They do.
Green chili burgers, to be exact. Not just like chili, like you put chili on a burger.
Oh, no, green chili burgers.
Yeah, green
chilies
made into a sauce and put on the burgers. They look phenomenal.
I adore green chili burgers. Now, Phil is your classic old school New World Order conspiracy theorist.
Yeah, he is.
A geologist and engineer by trade, Phil claimed to also be an important figure in NATO who helped construct deep underground military bases, which are unironically referred to as DUMBS.
But I do think that's kind of more of a feature than a bug, because they give it a silly name because it's a way to wash it over. But there is an entire world of deep underground military bases that are incredibly important to our intelligence services.
Well, Phil resigned from his post in protest after attending two United Nations meetings at an underground base in New York City, in which he learned that the New World Order was collaborating with otherworldly beings in their pursuit of the alien agenda.
And by underground base in New York City means he was screaming on the subway.
Hey, a lot of truth happens underground. That's also where it's legal to have an erection. If you're sat at a train station, I just got word that apparently it is illegal to walk around turgid.
In Utah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not in God's favorite state, California, though, where my erection points the way towards the best cold brew in any area that I'm in.
Yeah, tie a flag to it, they said.
As long as it's an American flag.
Well, following Phil's resignation, he spent 2 years giving a series of lectures in various hotel conference rooms across the country about government cover-ups and secret alien agendas. This is pre-internet.
It had to be small audiences, and it had to be small venues, because as he said multiple times, I am doing this illegally. I am doing this against my better judgment. I am doing this in the face of pure danger.
That is a very good impression.
Thank you. I spent hours watching him. I went and dug up all of the stuff that was left of him, because oddly, mysteriously, a lot of it was taken off the internet.
Yeah, he sounds like Jesse Ventura with a cold.
He does sound like a more degraded George Norrie.
Well, in these lectures, Phil detailed the underground battle which took place during the construction of the Dulce facility in August of 1979, in which members of the American military, along with private contractors, engaged with alien greys and came out the other side with only 3 survivors, one of them, of course, being Phil Schneider.
I'm one of the only survivors left. I'm the only one brave enough to talk. My other friends have committed suicide by the government and suicide by diabetes. It is an unfortunate circumstance of being one of the only people to harbor the radioactive nature of the truth.
Well, these lectures, however, all led to an alleged assassination in January of 1996. Mm-hmm. Like all the great conspiracy theorists, Schneider was reported to have died by suicide. But many in the UFO community believe that Phil was murdered by the government because of the secret information he was revealing to the public.
Do you know if you put the number 58008 into a calculator, it becomes magically the word boobs.
And other things they don't want you to know.
And so, to see how Phil's life turned into this wild ride, let's get into his full story as it was told in the book.
Very subtly titled, and I appreciate that you put it all in there.
Phil Schneider, one of the bravest whistleblowers of the 20th century, with overwhelming evidence to confirm that the Oklahoma City and World Trade Center bombings and 9/11 were false flag attacks. By Arthur Berkeley.
That's under one. And I actually do think it goes under F for false flags. If you are going to put it into a library.
Dewey Decimal System?
Yes. Yeah. There's a lot of sources about Phil Schneider. One was, there was a great documentary set by our friend's friend now. Uh-huh. Our friend, Darcy Weir.
Darcy, yeah, I watched it.
It's, guys, it's fun.
It certainly relies quite a bit on RT for its sources, which are, you know, Russian propaganda.
Hey, that's how else we get the truth about America.
And they didn't mention that he lost all his fingers. They said toenails, but not fingers.
He got it to a man. They turned my foot into a crisp. They opened me up like a fish.
Yep, just lost 3 fingers on his left hand. But I don't know why they didn't mention that.
2 fingers up.
So Phil Schneider was born in April of 1947 at Bethesda Navy Hospital in Maryland to 2 German immigrants named Oscar and Sally. Now, Oscar was a U-boat captain during World War II who sank an estimated 68 Allied ships. But Phil Schneider and anyone who writes about Phil in a positive light are all very careful to never say that Phil's father was a Nazi.
They specifically never say the N-word.
Yeah. Instead, they say that Oscar Schneider either served in Hitler's Navy or the even more innocuous German military.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Oscar had that great quote, "You boat me Nazi." Yeah.
Eddie Tude, stunt guy. Wait, he was a mysterious fellow in his own right, mm-hmm. Oscar Schneider.
Now, it seems as if Phil Schneider was destined for a life of high strangeness, because he said that his father had worked on secret Nazi time travel experiments in his capacity as a master machinist.
Well, use that analogy. That's not a term to be taken lightly. A master machinist could take a chunk of metal and make it into a lamp. He could take a chunk of metal and he could make it into a gun. He could take a chunk of metal and he could make it into a time-traveling interdimensional ship. He's a master machinist.
He did actually say that his father could take a hunk of metal and turn it into a gun.
Yeah, I did hear that quote as well, and you know, good for him.
He's proud of his dad.
Well,
makes one of us.
Well, for an example of Oscar's handiwork, one of his experiments involved a weapon called Die Glocke, or the clock. Die Glocke was designed to be a glowing, rotating contraption that was rumored to have an anti-gravitational effect that was used for both Nazi time travel and presumably Nazi UFOs.
Do you think that's why Hitler killed himself? Because he went into the future and saw that he lost and he was like, oh, I might as well just kill myself.
Well, fuck.
So, since Oscar Schneider was involved in these Nazi time travel UFO experiments, he was recruited by the United States government during Operation Paperclip, along with other Nazi scientists like Werner von Braun.
He is asked for by name.
Mm-hmm. But while Werner took America to the moon, Oscar Schneider was allegedly assigned to work under the sea, assisting in the development of nuclear submarines. Hmm. Now, as far as Oscar Schneider's involvement in Operation Paperclip, that part may very well be true.
We took him up. He did work for the U.S. government.
The Witness Relocation Program.
He definitely was a German soldier. Wink, wink, wink.
Yeah, I don't know. Hitler's army isn't much better than saying he was a Nazi.
Well, because he just reminds me of McHale's Navy. So all I hear when I see of Hitler's army, I just see like a bunch of weird, dumb Nazis going like, oh, like falling down in trenches and stuff and going, oof, oh, no. And like Hitler's pants falls down while he's visiting FDR and he goes, damn you, Colonel Stink. Like that's all I see.
When it came to stuff that's a little harder to prove, Oscar Schneider was also allegedly assigned to the legendary Philadelphia experiment in 1943.
With the legendary Carlos Allende, ha ha ha!
The Philadelphia experiment was, allegedly, America's attempt at creating invisibility technology by making a battleship disappear. But instead of making it disappear, they sent it into the future 40 years before it was brought back to its correct time, which, if I remember correctly, caused a fair amount of death and madness amongst the crew.
Well, one of the telltale signs of, like, that they
merged
theory,
with all the metal.
Yes, and that is, that's what they say is connects Oscar Schneider to all of this, is that there was some information going back and forth about guys with transistors found embedded in their bodies, and they were stretched and they were included in the metal.
I
and all
did
that
not carry the one. So you guys haven't done a Philadelphia experiment episode?
A million years ago.
Long time ago.
But now I have new stuff, so we always could do it again. It doesn't go away.
Yeah.
But the thing is about this story is that it contradicts Phil's claims because Operation Paperclip didn't begin until 1945. Philadelphia experiment, 1943. So Oscar Schneider, if he was a part of Operation Paperclip, could not have been involved in the Philadelphia experiment because he was too busy sinking Allied ships.
Yes, this is more indicating that Oscar Schneider had documents from this time period.
That he was not involved in the Philadelphia experiment itself, but he was consulted later as in, like, what the fuck happened?
That is the contention that they are making, okay. And that he just had documents on him that, quote-unquote, proved that the Philadelphia experiment was real. There was a couple of things on the documents that say stuff like Operation Big Sky, mm-hmm. Which is kind of one of those, again, long old school, old head conspiracy theory connecting back to Philadelphia experiment titles. There was also the stuff about how asking for special medical officers to come down to go look at these like top secret, essentially victims of some massive top secret thing that went wrong.
So if the Philadelphia experiment was real, wouldn't the ship have appeared for a little while in 1983?
It did.
That's what they say.
That's what they say.
Whoa!
Yeah, they said that it appeared like in 1983, and everyone's like, oh, what the fuck was that? And then, you know, and then it went back again.
That's what they say.
That's fucking awesome.
It is. Philadelphia experiment's fun. We might do it again.
No, the Philadelphia experiment, it is really fun because it's connected also to the Montauk Project.
That's really where we got to go next. Rob and I were talking about this the other day. We're going to go into Montauk Project because I got a bunch of books. Rob gave me his old books from the Montauk Project because he's from Long Island, and he was made by them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, Stranger Things is just the Montauk Project meets the Goonies.
Okay.
Yeah. They stole their entire fucking their entire, like, world from the Montauk Project. Now, either way, Oscar apparently kept his entire past a secret from his son, Phil, including the fact that Oscar was born in Germany. Apparently, Oscar Schneider and his wife had perfected an American accent before Phil was born and maintained it until the day they died, telling their son that they're just from California.
We are just from far, far east California.
We are from Fresno!
Well, Oscar Schneider only revealed his Nazi past and his involvement with various top secret operations to his son Phil on his deathbed.
So you mean to tell me we were at the first Pacific Pilgrims? Daddy, I can't believe this betrayal.
But he did come forward with a bunch of other information. This is where he revealed he was in an intelligence ops, and he was essentially stolen from the German government and given to us, and that essentially it would be up to Phil to carry it on.
Mm-hmm. Now, after studying engineering in college, Phil built a reputation as a gifted geological engineer. And while it doesn't seem like he intended to follow in his father's footsteps, he ended up being involved in military operations anyway through a job with the Morrison Knudsen Corporation.
So he did work for one of these big weird engineering firms that had government contracts, so that does track. But before this, it's kind of muddy. There was a FOIA request that was made a couple of years ago, and then eventually all of this stuff was declassified in 2021, which actually I'm kind of glad we waited, because a lot of stuff came out about Phil Schneider that, I mean, it's not that it's debunking him, it just, it adds to the soup. It's adding some saffron to the soup.
Let's just say it paints a much more three-dimensional character than what was previously presented to the conspiracy community.
So essentially, Phil Schneider, he was what he called a self-styled geologist and self-taught man, right? He loved rocks. Yeah. More than he loved having sex with a woman.
Yeah. Some people are dumb as rocks. He's smart as rocks.
Smart as rocks. And guess what? If you've met rocks, have you met some smart ass rocks? But Phil Schneider.
He does seem like the type of guy who's going to argue with you about the fucking difference between a rock and a mineral.
Do you understand that a mineral has so much more to gain? It has so much more to give.
But Phil Schneider, so he said he wanted to teach himself how to be a geologist, and he loved rocks. And he was going to school, but it was before he went all the way into becoming a geologist. Right now we know that he got a bachelor's, and we know that, I don't know really how far he went after that. We know that he was recorded that he had an IQ of 163.
Which is high.
That is very high.
Yeah.
Strange guy. But according to these leaked documents, he had a run-in with an FBI before any of this started. So at some point, because he was interested in rocks, and he was interested in funky rocks, that he asked around, and I guess he had several roommates that discovered that he bought this, like, he brought into it, this is a two-bedroom apartment in Portland. He brought in 100 pounds of all of this rock-like material that he purchased from just some guy. He got connected to somebody else. He brought it into the house. Eventually, a lot of these two roommates got really suspicious on him and called, because it seems like getting really weird, because they're like, what's wrong with these rocks? They smell weird. All this is weird. I don't feel good. Turns out, he had brought into their apartment 80 pounds of radioactive material that he stored under his bed. This is all according to real FBI files.
He Portland weird, man.
No, he did. The FBI get called saying, we think somebody's trying to buy, someone trying to create a nuclear weapon in an apartment building. So they show up. Thankfully, when you do read FBI records, which I do love, you can feel sometimes the sarcasm in it where you could definitely, they arrived expecting this guy to be Osama bin Laden, and all of a sudden you walk in and it's Osama bin shit. You know what I mean? Like, he's not good at his job. He's not.
Not the Rosenbergs here.
Yeah. This guy is not going to destabilize everything. You have two essentially very, very sick men. Now, he was, at this point, he had all these rocks. They were highly radioactive. They were like, this is against the Atomic Commission. Essentially, we could put you in the Hague for this. This is like a war crime, an international war crime.
Yeah.
And he's just been like, you know, you could go ahead and take my funky rocks.
He's just fucking glowing.
So he deeply irradiated himself. So remember that. Keep that in the back of your head.
Yeah, he deeply irradiated himself and his roommates. And can you imagine your roommate fucking irradiating you?
Dude, I'd be really mad.
Oh, yeah.
I'd be really upset.
They found literally a... They had cell-changing amount of radiation, not just in the apartment. The bed had to be thrown away. It had to be given to the government to get
away.
They
threw away the bed.
Yeah, buddy. They had it. The apartment building itself was radiated. The parking lot of the apartment building also had trace amounts of dangerous radiation in it. Mm-hmm. They pull all of this stuff out, which led to him saying, I'll kill every single FBI agent. Let's try take my fucking rocks. Which he said several times. The FBI had to come back and say, is it true? The same roommate that essentially gave you up to us for having nuclear material is also saying you're going to kill a bunch of FBI agents. And he was like, I would never. I would never do something like that. I'm just a man that needs rocks in a way that others don't. Take a look at these two fingers. You know for a fact that this is something that counts for me.
Well, this is long before he lost the fingers. This is when he's just a dude.
We'll get to that.
Rise from your grave.
Well, Morrison Knutson had a lot of government contracts, and when Phil was working for them in the late 70s, they were allegedly working for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers constructing deep underground military bases. And so, since DUMS, deep underground military bases, since they play such a huge role in Phil's story, let's explain exactly what they are, how they fit into conspiracy thought, and what the reality of DUMS actually are. Now, according to Richard Souder, author of the book Underground Bases and Tunnels, the U.S. government has been building deep underground military bases since World War II. Now, once again, the technology for building and maintaining DUMS came from the Nazis, or allegedly, because from what I've come to understand from studying conspiracies for well over a decade now, conspiracy theorists tend to almost revere the Nazis as having superhuman intelligence when it comes to technology.
Is there a reason why? It's because it's also making them appear to be that's how dangerous they were?
I think that's part of it, but I think this also may go some way towards explaining why so many modern conspiracy theories involve the Jewish folk. But considering how Jewish people have been at the center of conspiracy theories for centuries, the reverence conspiracy theorists show towards Nazi technology might be a feature and not a bug, if you know what I mean.
I don't.
It's because they love Nazis.
Oh, yeah, sure, okay.
Yeah, because the Nazis didn't like the Jews.
Yeah.
But either way, the technology developed by the Nazis was allegedly perfected by nuclear physicists at Los Alamos, who built nuclear-powered tunnelers called TBMs, or tunnel boring machines. These machines essentially vaporize rock using flame jets, water cannons, vibrations, freezing guns, plasma guns, electron pulses, and nuclear melting beams.
Yeah, dude.
They fucking hate rocks.
This supposedly allows the TBMs to tunnel up to 7 miles in a single day.
You know, there is theoretical nuclear drills.
Sure.
We just don't know whether or not they're actually being used or not. We know that they do drill gigantic holes. They do, because there are some of these bases. Mm-hmm. We know they drill them out. We know Phil Schneider developed the technology.
We know that he developed the technology.
He said it. He said he made other unknown, other hitherto deflagellation methods that have simply been stolen by every single international boring company you've ever met.
He calls it deflagellation.
Deflagellation.
It's fucking
That's real.
Is it? Deflagellation?
It's the, it's that. It's the using the heat and water to blow away the rock on the outside of a drill.
Oh, I thought that was how they made your hat. Deflagellation. Stomp my flag, I'll eat your ass. Yeah.
I wore this for Phil.
Well, these tunnels, bored by the TBMs, are said to connect the deep underground military bases through a series of magnetic levitation trains that travel faster than Mach 2, over 1,400 miles per hour. Mm-hmm. These trains connect 131 dumbs in the United States, and they connect some of the 1,477 dumbs that exist worldwide.
The express that you take from Rhode Island to France is amazing.
Oh, yeah, and it goes under the ocean?
Oh, yeah.
Well, not through the ocean.
Oh, because fish.
Now, 131 dumbs seems like a lot of dumbs.
Yep.
But conspiracy theories aside, there are at least two very real dumbs in the United States that are byproducts of America's Cold War with the Soviet Union. Although they aren't really dumbs because they're inside mountains, although technically they are under the ground, even if that ground is high.
The ground is higher than us, but it's in the ground, so yes, it's underground. That's how I would put that, yes. But, you know, they say this. I do believe.
Lockheed Martin's in a dumb.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they use natural rock formations that are already hollowed out, and then they put things in them. That's a part of one of the ways that they do it for real.
The lesser known of these two bases is the Raven Rock Mountain Complex, nicknamed Harry's Hole after the president who had it built, Harry Truman.
Oh, cool.
I mean, that sounds disgusting.
Yeah, of course.
Let's all take the family down to Harry's Hole.
Yeah, ride that train through Harry's Hole.
All right, all right, my sweet little daughter, let me lower your feet into Harry's Hole. Yeah, nice, waist deep. Head first.
How long does it take to build a dumb?
Easy. Look at this split. 3 months. Pipping in and out. It's easy. It's not poppycock.
He did say 3 months. Yes, poppycock and poo-poo. That's
poppycock. It's nothing but poppycock to say you can't make an underground military base for another 2 weeks.
He loves saying poppycock and poo-poo.
Easy to do. Order on Amazon Prime.
Well, the idea with Raven Rock, located close to the White House in Waynesboro, Pennsylvania, is that the government could still operate should Washington come under attack, nuclear or otherwise. According to Garrett Graff,
thank God.
Yes, the author of a very respectable and factual book called Raven Rock, The Story of the U.S. Government's Secret Plan to Save Itself. I actually hear this book is fucking incredible.
Oh, yeah. Feels like we should do an episode on this. Like, yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah, a listener, I've actually had this book like on my shelf for a while now wanting to read it because I hear it's just I hear this book is absolutely insane. But Raven Rock is a massive freestanding city with three-story buildings built inside of a mountain.
That's cool.
Has a medical facility, a fire station, a police department, and a dining hall that serves 4 meals a day.
I am angry because the Chinese food is not nearly as authentico as I thought it would be. I had a wonton the other day, and I almost threw up. I can't believe what kind of institution's going on in here.
Luckily, his hands have chopsticks.
Yeah, his too. Where's my eating fingers?
See, Raven Rock was created at the dawn of the Cold War in the late 40s, where not only the government, but a select number of civilians could escape should the Soviets launch a nuclear attack.
I'd love to see that list, because you know it's like not Milton Berle. Yeah. Like, who all goes down there in the pit in 1949?
Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
Fucking Dean Martin. Not Jerry Lewis.
No, get him out of there. Dude. You know what I was going through today?
I thought you were going to say that Bob Newhart died, which I'm very sad about.
We're all very sad. I couldn't even continue. I can barely speak.
Bob Newhart could barely speak as well.
It's very old. I was looking this up. So Dennis Quaid, for some reason, is playing Reagan in a new, like, right-wing, like, Reagan's an amazing movie. Like, ideas that's like Reagan's. Guess who's playing Frank Sinatra?
How old is he? It's an older man. Older Frank.
No, yeah.
Harvey Keitel.
Scott Stapp is playing Frank Sinatra.
No. Oh, my God.
I got the world on the stream.
I feel like, what is he going to do? How would he physically be able to sing like Frank Sinatra?
We're a stranger in the night.
He does sing like 78-year-old Frank Sinatra.
But yeah, that was when he was going like, blue eyes.
looking at me. Nothing but blue eyes. Do I see?
Well, at the time of Raven Rock's construction, the Soviets didn't have a particularly large nuclear arsenal, and it was estimated that the government would have at least an 8-hour warning before the bombs were dropped. But when the Soviet bombs became Soviet missiles, the 8-hour window shrunk to 15 minutes, and the plan to save the locals and the government became a plan to save a small number of policymakers.
I'm just going to make a little desk over in Raven Rock, just in case. And I'm just going to kind of maybe we'll go check it out, you know, like, ooh, I got my favorite snacks in there.
Now, when the Soviet Union collapsed in the 90s, Raven Rock powered down just a bit. But after 9/11, Raven Rock expanded again, and today it can hold anywhere between 6 and 10,000 people. And the complex is staffed every hour of every day. Skeleton crew, but yeah. Still, it's ready for a fucking avalanche.
And I think it's great.
And if there's nothing I know better about our government, I know that each one of those 10,000 spots are saved for some of the most vulnerable members of our society. The congressmen. Yeah. And it's the most
and they
vulnerable.
Deserve it.
They just deserve it. They deserve everything.
For as much as they sacrifice for us, they sacrifice so much.
Every day I pray for Nancy Pelosi. I hope she gets a free ice cream from somebody.
They got to do, but they can't really save everyone from the government because they're so old and useless. They got to like procreate and make new babies and stuff.
Eddie, unfortunately, those are the only ones that are getting saved.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, the Democrats are always thinking ahead, right?
They always got a plan in their back pocket.
They're always thinking, it's like, no, we don't need all these. Let's think about the young generation. You know, that's what the Democrats are always thinking about.
Like young guys, Nancy Pelosi, Chuckie Schumer, Joe Biden, loving these guys.
Yeah, the
Looking
youth.
Cool. Yeah. You know? Rapping all day.
Well, the other deep underground military base that's far more well-known is the Cheyenne Mountain Complex, which was built in Wyoming during the 1960s to serve as the headquarters for the North American Aerospace Defense Command, a.k.a. NORAD. Now, NORAD headquarters were created as a joint American-Canadian project to track Soviet bombers and missiles, and is therefore designed to withstand a nuclear attack. But as opposed to Raven Rock, NORAD headquarters only have dorm-style facilities, although according to the Washington Post, it does have a Subway franchise.
Oh, great. Jared safe.
They couldn't get a Jersey Mike's?
No, buddy. No, that's two states specific.
Well, yeah, and it's, you know, fresh meat.
You can't get fresh meat down in NORAD every day.
No.
It's not freshly sliced. It's not Jersey Mike's.
That's right.
I see that fucking billboard on the way to work every day.
Danny DeVito.
Now, Phil Schneider claimed that all of the funding for building these deep underground military bases, which again, number 131 in the United States alone, they come from black budgets, which are funded by CIA drug operations. Now, the last part is true. The CIA have funded some of their operations with drug money.
Many operations with drug money.
With stolen drug money, or they're selling drugs and using that money?
Both. Selling drugs and using that money, and stolen drug money. Yeah.
And human trafficking.
Stolen drug money, I feel like... They can have that.
No, they do.
They definitely do. But no, it has been proved that the CIA has been involved in the sales of drugs in order to fund their own projects.
The crack epidemic.
That's truth. Yeah.
That's something. Oh, yeah. Very much so. Yeah.
Yeah. But if Phil is right about where the money is going, then the CIA must be selling a hell of a lot of cocaine.
Yeah.
Because deep underground military bases cost anywhere between $17 and $19 billion, putting the cost of America's dumbs at nearly $2.5 trillion.
But you see, also according to Phil, is that because of alien technology, these things are getting cheaper and faster to build, mm-hmm. which is why we can pump them out 3 a year. And it's actually only costing a quarter of that a lot of the times because you got alien concrete, you got alien masers, you got alien workforce, which is super cheap because they don't know what money is. They only use Bitcoin.
Yeah, they use Bitcoin.
Yeah, what's incredible is that you're like saying all this stuff like Phil Schneider's like still saying it today. He said all this stuff 30 years ago.
Oh. It's still being said right now.
Yeah, it is.
I watched a documentary yesterday.
But Schneider was well aware of this math. And he said that dumbs are so important to the government that 28% of our GDP is spent on building and maintaining them. Schneider claims to know all of this because he supposedly had the highest security clearance possible, Rhyolite 38, which is 38 levels above top secret.
Yep, that's absolutely true. It's right next to Xylitol 69. Another most super secret ways to get in and out of a building. You can't even believe it. These are people taking upside down stairs. It's crazy to believe. You know, they have walk-a-vaders. Walk-a-vaders are real. Going sideways various places. But he says he was possibly the only man that has been given this clearance. Well, it actually does increase with each lecture.
Yeah.
So first started with it's the only man, then it's one of five, and then it does get more specific, because then he said it was like, yeah, a conflagration of several Navy SEALs, several senators, some other true crack guys, little rock surfaces.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is this a real thing, level 38 past top secret? Is that...
I am looking it up right now.
I am
Rhyolite 38 is actually, it is, he does a good job of using terms. He looks them up.
Well, rhyolite is a rock.
But that does happen.
A rock, not Iraq.
A rock.
Okay. A-rock.
Yeah. Rhyolite, it's an igneous rock.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, from magma.
It very well, these are all initials. Oh, this is confusing, buddy.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry.
This is really, even just saying, it's just super confusing. I tried to look. You know what happened? I actually just flashed back because I was stoned 3 days ago looking this up, and just the level of what comes out of it, these like layers and graphs and these things. I don't know.
Okay, great.
Yeah, it's a lot of answers on Quora. But not much other than that.
It doesn't really matter because he's purposely working under the wrong social security number so he can hide.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I thought he was forced to work under the wrong social security number.
You thought?
First mistake.
Now, out of the 131 domes that Schneider says were constructed in America since World War II, Phil claimed to have been involved in the construction of 13. And since he had such high clearance on black budget projects for 17 years, he was privy to some incredible earth-shattering secrets. For example, Phil said he attended a UN meeting where he learned that 5-foot-tall gray aliens were actually the heads of the UN and dictated the New World Order policies. And all the leaders of the world and NATO are controlled by the grays.
I just feel like it's a lot for one meeting.
Yes.
It's a lot, because even what we get to cover in one of our meetings, so small.
Very small.
You don't get to a lot of stuff.
No, but he learned all of this in one meeting. And when he told his geologist department about what he discovered, they all supposedly quit in protest.
Well, I'm going to go study rocks in Mexico.
Do you think they might have quit because he seemed insane?
No.
No. That was my thought.
Well, it's also, you're working in a school. He is a geologist, and he's coming in, and he's saying he just came back from this UN meeting, and they're like... How?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how'd you get there?
Mm-hmm.
Why were you there?
You talk about rocks.
Yeah, and he's just been like, you will never believe how poor rocks are. To the nation, what's happening to the United Nations is out of control. And she's been like, all right, well, stalactites. That's all I got to say. Ellie, you know, my friend Ellie's a geologist.
Oh, yeah, that's right. She's going to hate this.
Yeah.
Well, Phil also said that Ronald Reagan's Star Wars program was a literal space defense plan to fend off alien invasions, jointly developed with Soviet Premier Mikhail Gorbachev. Now, I don't know how that's possible if all the world's leaders are controlled by grays, but that's what Phil said nonetheless. But what Phil definitely knew was that the New World Order and the alien agenda are one and the same. And according to him, their plan is to eliminate 7/8 of the world's population by 2029. So according to him, most of us only have 5 or so years left.
Hey, we'll find out. But this is, it's interesting because the concept of a New World Order, I've always found, like, he has a Christian stripe in his ideology.
Most of these guys do.
They always do. So this idea of a New World Order, destroying boundaries of countries, I don't really understand how it necessarily helps the alien. The way he ramps it up is that he talks about these treaties that we have signed with various alien races, and that we have the Degaida Treaty, which is still our favorite.
Yeah.
The one where Eisenhower had the emergency. He faked an emergency dental problem in Florida. He went to a meeting with an alien. They signed an agreement that for a certain number of humans and animals that we are going to volunteer to the aliens, that they then will give us a certain amount of technology. And he's saying that we signed a deal with the devil. And this is kind of where this begins, is that that's where all of these mass disappearances are happening.
Yeah,
because, is that we're giving them to aliens.
Well, because the aliens ended up going back. They took too many.
They
said you can have 20 and they took 30.
And you can go out there, you can say, the contract you sign with an alien is as thick as the paper it's signed on.
So who represented the aliens and read the contract?
A man named Valiant Thor.
Well, Valiant Thor, the guy who worked with he was one of the human interests with alien origins. Or he is from the planet Venus. He's purple. He lives the age of 490. He can't be in our atmosphere because he's got a disease on his skin that'll kill all of us.
Yeah, but he's a lawyer.
Yep.
Yeah. No, he works for the government.
Yeah.
Big on contract law. Yeah. Went to Pepperdine.
That's his thing, man. It's all contract law in space. That's a big thing people don't understand, is how important lawyers are to the galaxy.
Now, as far as who's aware of all this, Phil Schneider said that everyone in the military above the basic grunt enlistment level has knowledge of the alien agenda, which, if true, means all you fuckers listening right now have been keeping the truth from us for well over a decade now.
Not about 10 of you, though. I've gotten several emails about the truth over the years.
About?
What's really going on.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, and I read them. And I've even let it pepper in every once in a while. What I've learned over the years.
I'm glad we can help spread lies.
No. See, it's all about stories, Eddie. We're telling stories.
But even though aliens supposedly control everything, Schneider said that they can't understand human speech because we talk too slowly. Just like how we can't understand whales because they talk too slowly for us to understand.
Fucking idiot whales. Dude, just slow-ass speech. You can't say shit, you fucking stupid whale.
Eddie, have you ever heard a whale sped up? It says fucking nasty shit, dude.
Yeah, I'm licking your mama's pussy.
Whoa! Whoa! How do you even know how to lick pussy?
Yeah, my tongue's the size of an elephant. So is your mama.
Whoa, hey, my mother loves the sea.
Man, a lot of DMX's raps were ghostwritten by whales.
Yeah, did you know whales could bark?
Did you know that?
That's what?
But no matter the method of communication, aliens had their own underground underwater bases on Earth for at least 500,000 years. But it's only recently that we've been able to fight back. For example, the nuclear tests at Bikini Atoll between 1946 and 1958 were, as far as I can tell, sustained assaults against an underwater alien base. Assaults that were carried out with the blessing of the Japanese because they'd been losing people to street-level alien abductions for years.
Yeah, dude, we should never have allowed aliens to rent vans.
Mm-hmm. Street-level abductions. Yes. And so, America was forced to build their own deep underground military bases.
Forced!
Both to defend themselves against the alien threat.
How else are we going
to
do?
And to also work with the aliens. Yes. But also to work against them.
With them.
While also working with them.
Well, there's multiple types of aliens.
Eddie's getting it.
There's 11 races of alien. This is true. And we got, they're too friendly. There are four that are antagonists. We got several that have left to go handle matters on their own planet.
It's nice. But you know the Subaru...
Subaru star system.
Yeah.
The Sirius star system.
It's Pleiades.
Yeah, I know.
That's fun, right?
Oh, I know that.
That's fun.
Yeah. It's where all lesbian DNA came from.
Now, most of these bases are supposed to have been built underneath established military bases like Area 51 or Los Alamos.
Oh, I will say there's a little bit of the idea of alien bases. It's a little bit off the mark, Marcus, because it's not that they have built or constructed bases. It's that they just use our natural caverns to live in.
Yeah.
And they are there already. So when you go down there, when they say, but I just feel like it's...
I said nothing to the contrary,
I
sir.
I just feel that when you say the term alien bases, the audience might think that the aliens themselves are doing construction. No, these are the aliens' home. This is their vacation homes on the planet Earth that we are gentrifying using our military apparatuses. This is like what happened in New Hampshire with the lakes. This is like what happened in Minnesota with the lakes.
They got lots of lakes in Minnesota.
But there, a lot of them can co-opted.
State bird's the mosquito.
But they've been, that's funny, but it's also a problem. It's a problem. It's a growing problem. But that's what we're doing here is we're moving in on these precious lands and using them for bombs.
So they're living in our tubes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
They're living in our tubes and we're blowing them out the tubes. And we went there to go and we weren't testing bombs. We were just blowing shit up on islands.
Mm-hmm. Well, as far as the bases that we built, Area 51, for example, has 9 underground bases underneath the 140 square miles that encompass Area 51's restricted areas. Other bases, however, are built in plain sight, like the dome that's supposedly underneath the conspiracy-laden airport in Denver, Colorado.
Phil Schneider was also a big OG Denver International Airport conspiracy theory guy.
He was, yeah. All of this is possible, Phil says, because military technology has advanced approximately 44.5 years for each single year of civilian technological advancement, which is why the military was able to make a ship disappear in 1943. So it's like, in 1996, military technology was 1,200 years ahead of what we had at our disposal. Like, we had 14 4K modems and fucking VCR TV combos.
Whoa.
And they're
so what'd the government have?
Fucking, like...
Baldur's Gate?
Baldur's... They had Baldur's Gate 12.
No! Why?
Yeah, dude.
No!
No, they had Elder Scrolls 6, fucker.
Fuck that!
Yeah!
Get hiding! We gotta go to the government! Get Baldur's Gate 12! And I'll bet these last two fingers on it.
Then you won't be able to play Baldur's Gate.
I'll use the other hand! This is my jerk-off hand and liberty hand.
But perhaps this high... You know, I don't think we've told the audience that Phil Schneider was missing fingers.
Oh, I thought that was well known.
No.
Well,
no.
I wanted
you
to
haven't
get into...
Been, you've been doing a visual joke of two fingers.
It's because we haven't gotten to his service in the military yet.
That is true.
Was he a waiter?
Do they have restaurants in the army?
They did it at Rammstein.
But do they have waiters?
I'm sure they have waiters.
I think it's more they got the sloppers, you know?
Yeah, they got the guys who flop the shit on the... Yeah, it's all cafeterias, I think.
Yeah, and I think it's civilians come on the base, like work at the PX. Like
the generals have a waiter.
Yeah.
I imagine the generals...
The generals have an attaché.
Oh, what is that?
A waiter.
Oh.
But perhaps this highly advanced technology is why these deep underground military bases, much like nuclear power plants and nuclear missile silos, are often associated with UFO sightings. And here's where we get to Phil Schneider's involvement in the alien-run Dulce facility.
This is really the heart of his story and why he would go on his speaking tour and what the main bulge of information he would give.
Now, stories of UFO activity around Dulce, New Mexico are by no means exclusive to the lectures of Phil Schneider, nor do all the stories involve a massive underground base full of aliens. Rather, Dulce is just one of those UFO hotspots that seem to dot the landscape of the American Southwest. Many roads, however, do lead to Dulce Base.
It's because our deserts are our most powerful spiritual center.
Mm. For example, back in the late 70s, a state trooper named Gabe Valdez spotted a UFO in the sky and soon after found a mutilated cow. Near the cow, he found abandoned gas masks, which, to Officer Valdez, was a sign of government involvement. Most bizarrely, though, when the trooper examined the mutilated cow carcass further, he found a dead fetus inside that was not a cow, but a human monkey frog hybrid.
Oh, it just wasn't done cooking.
Yeah, this is going to need about another 20 minutes, 325. Yeah. This is about a rare.
And after that, Valdez became the go-to cattle mutilation guy in the Southwest. Now, not too long after finding the human monkey frog, Officer Valdez attended a public meeting about cattle mutilations held by U.S. Senator Harrison Schmitt, formerly of NASA.
Boo!
And currently the last living person to have walked on the moon.
Now, not to go, the Chinese were just there last month.
Yeah, but it was a drive-by.
But did they land?
Yeah, they landed on the dark side. They planted some shit. They're like, we own the dark side of the moon. They went back to China.
Did what? They walked around on it?
I believe so. They planted a flag and shit.
Good for them.
Yeah, China's all up on the moon.
It's probably not good, but it's fine.
But my question is, if a monkey...
No, it was an uncrewed spacecraft.
Uncrewed?
That was uncrewed, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, stop lying to me, China. But the but if a monkey human frog comes out of a cow, is it beef?
Oh, yeah. Oh, see, if that, I'm eating
that's
it.
That's eating, right?
Oh, yeah. If I'm eating it, it's beef. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I'd say. To eat it.
I mean, to be technical, it was a human-monkey frog.
Human-monkey frog.
Not yeah. a monkey-human frog.
Yeah, monkey-human oh, okay. frog, something else.
So it was mostly human, half human, half monkey frog.
Frog. Yes. Because the other way, it's
like
a monkey.
Half shark, alligator, half man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now you're learning.
Wait till we do the Montauk Project, man. You're going to be so angry. Because that is just straight up DJ Skrillex with animals.
Well, at this talk by U.S. Senator Harrison Schmidt, because that's the thing, man, that cattle mutilation in the 70s was taken fucking seriously.
Dude, all of the capital P phenomena, it's still taken very seriously. Mm-hmm. Because
it's
cattle,
expensive.
It's big money.
It's and, very expensive.
And it's still largely extremely mysterious.
Yeah. Well, at this talk, Valdez was introduced to a fascinating man named Paul Benowitz, who I hope we can one day cover on his own episode.
Oh, I have a book on him. I kind of know what to do with him. Paul Benowitz is actually an extremely important person in UFO lore.
Yeah. But through Benowitz, Valdez was introduced to a woman named Myrna Hansen, who'd also seen UFOs in the area. That's when they brought in psychologist and fellow cattle mutilation enthusiasts, Leo Sprinkle.
Hello, everyone. It's me, the sweetest ufologist who's ever lived. Hope you like rum raisin. Sorry, it's just my cologne.
Meet me at the Dairy Queen.
Oh, we got reporting, Dairy Queen reporting.
Can I suck your dick for ice cream?
This guy's crazy. This guy sucked my dick the other day for fucking strawberry ice cream.
If I remember, I think his name was Reginald Leo Sprinkle.
I just recently was watching, just so you guys know, we'll cover this a little bit on Side Stories. Missing 411 just finally did a UFO episode, which they've been tap dancing around for fucking ever since it started coming out, since he started developing it, David Paulides. But Sprinkle comes on.
Yeah.
And I'm so sad because Natalie, first of all, she's like, who the fuck is Leo Sprinkle? And I was like, baby, you did it right here. It's ufology in a nut, dude. But I was so angry he didn't have like a mint green top hat and a handlebar mustache.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah,
there's
yeah.
no, that is what you should do.
At least suspenders.
Oh, yeah. I think he's just afraid that if he dresses like that, he won't be able to go near an elementary school.
Well, Sprinkle was flown out to New Mexico to hypnotize Myrna Hansen, and she reported recollections of being abducted and taken to an underground base nearby where she saw body parts floating in vats. Now, that happened. As far as it, you know, her recollecting it, as far as her being hypnotized by Leo Sprinkle, she did say that. As far as we know, this in 1980 was the first time that anyone mentioned Dulce Base and possible alien encounters therein. This is 13 years before Phil Schneider started talking about it.
And there was also a book when we did our series in the Dulce Base a long time ago. One of the things that we used as a source was a book called The Dulce Wars, Underground Alien Bases and the Battle for Planet Earth. I know you took it from Bibliotheca Pleiades, but essentially Bibliotheca Pleiades had stolen the entire story from this book.
They distilled it down.
Yes, which was written by Branton.
Branton?
Branton. And the foreword was by Commander X. So this came out then. But no one knows who Branton is, and I actually kind of believe that Branton is probably the fake name of the CIA officer that put together a lot of this story.
Well, that's the thing. Is that they said that the name of the guy was Thomas Castillo, I think.
Yes, Thomas Costello was one of the guys.
Yeah. And it has been proven from declassified CIA documents that Paul Benowitz was the victim of a very real disinformation campaign in which he was fed false information about aliens that eventually drove him to a fucking mental asylum.
This is very serious about, there is something to be learned about Paul Benowitz's involvement in UFO circles and the attachment to this story. I do believe that the Dulce Base story is an allegorical like there's meaning here about what's actually going on. And but Paul Benowitz is proof that a lot of these people within these UFO communities are manipulated by intelligence services or are members of various intelligence services. Now, that is interesting. So in one way, that's why everybody says, oh, all of these stories are fake. Oh, they're an op, blah, blah, blah. Aliens are just some kind of smokescreen for something else, which I guess makes sense. But I actually think that they already do that using the media, using various other ways. I always kind of ask myself the one question. It's like, okay, if UFOs are bullshit and aliens aren't real and any sort of understanding we have of them are mistaken and wrong, then normally you could just kind of let Phil Schneider themselves. Like you could essentially have them come out and ruin stuff or maybe fuck stuff up as it is because they're maybe sort of unreliable as a person to talk about it. And they're already flooding the zone with nonsense. But if not, if the UFO community is constantly being kind of used by the CIA program or the CIA is embedded in all these places, what is it that's so important about this story that you're putting all of these resources into fucking with these fat nerds?
Yeah.
Like, what's the point of fucking with all of these nerds if it's all BS to begin with? Like, so I don't know. That's where it falls.
Yeah.
Question. No answers.
But back in 1979... Paul Benowitz claimed that he had intercepted electronic signals in Dulce, which he believed were emanating from deep underground. And the 1980 sessions with Myrna Hansen and Leo Sprinkle seemed to confirm his suspicions that something was going on at Dulce.
It is, and there's something was going on at Dulce.
And that's the thing, is that there was something going on there. He did pick up some, and but there is the possibility that these people were sent to these people
muddy the waters.
To muddy the waters with Paul Benowitz. And then now it's 2024 and we're still talking about underground alien battles.
Well, dumbs are still, there are a lot of weird shit happens underground.
Now, allegedly, Dulce is one of the two bases created as a collaboration between the U.S. government and alien nations where technology can be exchanged. Additionally, it is a biogenetic laboratory where alien-human hybrids are created and experimented upon in one of Dulce Base's 7 underground levels.
Two words, Taylor Swift.
Yeah? How's that working?
Plant. Plant made.
She does...
German DNA spliced with stupid elf bullshit.
She is a tall white.
She is. She's the Aryan ideal.
But these levels are security, human housing, laboratories, mind control experiments, alien housing.
Because they can't be together.
Genetic experiments, cryogenic storage, and the mysterious nightmare hall, which may or may not be the birthplace of the human monkey frog.
I actually wish that you'd stop calling me a nightmare and start calling me a human monkey frog American. I hope that one day I can run for office as the senator of human monkey frog affairs. So that everybody knows we're people too.
Halfway.
That impression was riveting.
But before the collaborative Dulce base was allegedly constructed, the underground caverns below Dulce were already the site of a base that had been used by reptilian humanoid hybrids and alien greys for 500 years. And this is where Phil Schneider says that he enters the story. Well, in August of 1979, Phil Schneider, working for the Morrison Knudsen Construction Company, was a part of a team that was digging 4 large holes in the desert in the course of constructing a deep underground military base.
It is kind of interesting how they are made.
Because
they do drill them, they drill like holes, and then they burrow out from the holes.
Mm-hmm. How else would you do it?
Coming at an angle, drink the milkshake.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not an engineer.
But in one of those holes, the equipment kept breaking. So Phil Schneider was sent down into the shaft to diagnose the issue.
Oh, see, now I do find it interesting because he's like in a spacesuit, right, essentially.
Why is he going underground in the spacesuit?
Because the fumes. So that's also what's really interesting about going underground.
Yeah, if,
if you go to certain places underground, like I was reading about that. It's like one of the super dangerous things about like cave diving in unknown cave systems, because you could go into a little area that you'd think is filled with air, but it's like filled with a gas that will kill you.
Oh, like the canary in the coal mine.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
Live from your grave.
Now, Schneider was unaware that they were building a 7-story, 2.5-mile deep structure on top of a pre-existing alien base full of alien hostiles. That's partly why Phil Schneider was so pissed off all the time.
You gotta give us a heads up!
But it does seem like he knew there was some sort of danger. It's either that or he just had a fucking Walter PPK pistol on him at all times.
He's like, you see, I was there on the scientist aspect, so allow my job was more about educational and technical support, but I had my trusty Walter PPK pistol because when you're wearing an underground spacesuit, you can't be lugging around the big pieces of metal the other boys like to bring around.
Yeah. He said it wasn't loaded, though.
Yeah, that's which makes it even more bizarre.
It was loaded.
Well, no, it wasn't loaded. No. He had the ammunition, but he also had the gun. The gun and
he
the ammunition.
He had to load it, and that's why it was such a problem for him.
Hey, man, hey, you just never know when you do a bad job at work. It's a good way to get out.
Boss wants to see you.
Nope, you'll see me in hell.
If there were aliens down there, that means that someone in the government knew that there were aliens in there and that they were drilling down there. It was like, let's see what happens.
Here we don't know.
Well, there's some, do you want me to try to tell you how it vaguely makes sense?
Yeah.
Was that we are in cooperation with alien greys and we do work with them. And this was in cooperation with the alien greys. But according to them, this began with a conflict downstairs. So at first, it was all okay. And then something happened that there was a conflict between, there were green berets and a black berets, which I've never heard of.
They existed.
Yeah. But he said that they were there in camp, this line already, where they've been having some problems with the aliens that are downstairs. Essentially, what happened, it was like, we talked about this when we were in Denver recently, how we were downtown, and when you see that one, like when you're in an old... When you're in a downtown area and it's all like skyscrapers and stuff, but then you happen to see like one place that's like an old house.
Yeah.
That whoever has decided, whoever lives there, somehow still alive and will not sell. They don't care what anybody will do.
Some
right?
of my favorite people in the world.
I love them. Very, very stubborn people. Those were the aliens. They were not wanting to leave.
Because they couldn't go back home because of all the rape charges.
It's too hot at home. I can't go back. I can't go. My ex-girlfriend is there. I won't be able to work at that tattoo parlor anymore.
But it was indeed lucky that Phil was armed, because just as he got to the bottom of the tunnel, he saw 2 7-foot-tall gray aliens, whom Phil described as smelling worse than the worst garbage you can imagine. Phil opened fire and killed both of them. But just before...
It could have been nice!
Yeah, but Ed, they smell bad.
Well, he said, like, well, that's also the... it's kind of interesting, because if he did... So, according to him...
He could have started the alien war.
Literally.
Yes.
If he came out of the shaft, he said he was... What he saw was so horrific and so terrifying that he instinctually reached for his gun and shot it.
It instinctually... loaded his gun and shot it.
Oh, God, my God, my God.
While he was wearing a spacesuit.
Yes, he said it was very, that's why it's very difficult.
Yeah, to load the gun instinctually.
And shoot, put your finger in the trigger if you got a space glove on.
He had to, that's what he said. It was very difficult.
Mm-hmm. Well, Phil killed both of them, but just before one of the greys died, he waved a hand in front of his chest, and a blue beam shot out and struck Phil. As Phil put it, the beam literally opened him up like a fish.
Can you say it right?
Opened him up like a fish.
And burned off his toenails as if he was struck by lightning. It also blew off 3 fingers on his left hand. And indeed, Phil did have just 7 fingers, which he was all too happy to show off during his mini lectures.
The only rigs I can have are a pinky ring.
He could have a wedding ring, but his wife took it.
Yeah, well, it's because the truth is caustic to love.
According to Phil's story, he thought he was a goner. but a green beret who'd come down the shaft just after him shoved Phil into the construction elevator and saved Phil's life just before the first Battle of Dulce began.
Yeah, dude, that guy sacrificed his life for Phil, and then he got blasted into pieces.
How many aliens were down there?
Well, the ensuing melee killed 66 Secret Service agents, Green Berets, and Black Berets, and Phil claimed to be one of only three people who survived. As far as Phil knew, the other two spent the rest of their lives in custody somewhere in Canada.
Well, one of them died. Mm-hmm. That is true. One of them died, and then one of them was Paul Benowitz.
Mm-hmm.
What about the other 66? We would have heard something about this in all of time.
But no. They're all dead. They're all,
yeah, POWs.
What about their families?
Granada.
Yep.
They died in Granada.
E. coli.
Yeah.
E. coli went through the camp.
Yeah. Libya.
Bats.
They would get their fucking bodies back, and there would be giant rain.
Dude. And they'd be charred.
The waters of Camp Lejeune. That's what this is all about, dog. Yeah,
that's what Lejeune is all about. You may be entitled for compensation. But concerning the blue beam, Phil said that his lung was blasted out of his chest, and he was in isolation for the next 400 days. And just like Phil had only 7 fingers, many people confirmed that he did have a massive scar across his chest.
Now, this is where it also gets a little muddy. So some of the FOIA stuff...
Muddy is a kind way to put it.
Yeah. So the FOIA stuff that came out revealed that he might have received a schizophrenia diagnosis at some point, where he was also doing some form of self-harm, which I guess can be not put with a lot of schizophrenia.
He made the scar on his chest.
The guy that ratted him out to the FBI said that he cut his own fingers off for attention, which is like, that's a lot, right?
It's,
I don't think
Banshees,
it's real.
Of Inisherin.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think. I actually think that there's a more prosaic kind of explanation that it's also mixed with all of this, which is, now that we know for a fact, I think it all makes a lot of sense that he was irradiated by exposed to radioactive material for a month. Plus,
he's probably holding it a bunch.
Oh, it was all over him.
My radiated rock.
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. And he brought them on tour with him. Mm-hmm. He, I believe,
every lecture that he had, he'd like bring out like a radiated rock.
He probably held it with these three fingers.
Yeah, oh, he did. Yeah, he'd always be like, "That's how you know it's really hanging with the I got it with the lobster."
Mm-hmm.
Now, and in his speeches, did he show the scar on his chest?
He did. He would show the scar. He would show the scar on his chest. He would show his hand, and then, but. I think literally he was melting. We think that he was slowly dying. He was riddled with cancer. He had MS. He was covered in scars. They said that he might have. That is the thing where the fingers are just like they're cut off.
Well, he was missing a lung.
Oh yes,
he was. You can live with one lung.
Well, actually, no, that's the thing. I'll get to that later as far as, like, whether or not he was actually missing a lung.
Yeah, he was.
Not really sure about that. He just, now that I think about it, he just said that he was missing a lung.
But no, he was the melting man.
Yeah, but it's also very possible that he was, you know, he just had schizophrenia.
Mm-hmm. It is possible.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Because when Phil's ex-wife, Cynthia, first met him, she said that he had a horrible memory because of the medications he'd been prescribed after suffering several accidents during his work as a contractor. Now, one question I want to ask you, the FOIA request that FBI, that when the roommate talked about Phil cutting off his own fingers, do you know what year that report's from?
76.
76. Okay.
Which is 3 years before the Dulce story.
Long before anything else.
Yes.
You know, long before any of this shit.
Yes. He said that a lot of his self-harm happened during his college years.
Yeah.
And there was like what you'd call, these are like his missing years before the Dulce incident.
But after Phil got married, he stopped taking his meds.
Yeah, man, because he's better, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, now that you're married, you don't have to worry about being nice all the time.
It's not true.
It's not true at all.
It's not true.
And that's when Phil suddenly began to remember what happened to him at Dulce, along with all the other, let's say, creative details about his past.
Well, the creative details about his past were also readily available. They were starting to get passed around in various conspiracy theory groups.
I'm talking more about like the creative details, like attending NATO meetings.
Oh, he started that. You could see those details get added in each speech.
Yeah.
So the speech stays the same for the most part because he really only toured in 1995. And in that speech, like, there's several versions of it, and they become more specific and embellished each time he does it.
I will say that I watched some of his speeches, and he didn't seem crazy.
Well, that's why he is.
Because a lot of times these people, you look at them like the guy we saw at the Contact in the Desert. You're like, oh, crazy.
Well, it's because of the hat.
Yeah, well, yeah, the hat was horrible.
This is, I think I would even generously call him odd.
Mm-hmm. I would say he was a bit of an oddball. Like, I got the impression from him. I think sometimes when someone delivers something with a lot of intensity and a lot of confidence,
yeah.
then
oh, yeah.
that can mask a lot of their symptoms. Mm-hmm. And Phil Schneider was a very confident man
yeah.
With his delivery. But I also think he was a very sick man
yeah.
in yes. many ways.
I think he might have been a very sick man.
Do you think that's where his like high level of intelligence helped him out?
Basically, yeah. and confidence. I think that he was very smart, and I think he was all a little bit, and then he was also mentally ill.
Yeah.
Now, being married to Phil was predictably difficult, as there aren't a lot of hardcore conspiracy theorists out there who are able to maintain a healthy marriage.
Sex is too good. Drives women insane. Natalie's barely hanging on. Why do you think I didn't get into NASA? They've been bugging my home, hearing how good I am at it.
Well, as such, Phil and Cynthia were only married for 3 years, from 1987 till 1990. But even then, Phil still only talked to his ex-wife and a few select friends about his experiences and didn't say anything publicly for another 3 years.
Well, she fought him for him to the very end, and she wrote several rebuttal letters saying that he definitely was all real.
Mm-hmm. Phil, however, said everything changed when his friend Ron Rummel was found dead from a seemingly self-inflicted gunshot wound in an Oregon park.
This is honestly where things did change for him.
Yeah, 1993.
Yes, this was a real buddy of his
mm-hmm.
that ran a thing called the Alien Digest.
A series of newsletters called the Alien Digest. He was the publisher and writer.
Was it doing well?
No. I mean, it was getting around.
Yeah.
It contained accounts of aliens in the government, and Rummel was about to assemble all his newsletters into a book. And Schneider believed that Rummel was suicided by the government before he could publish.
Now, part of the reason why they believe that he died by suicide,
Rummel,
and why then this would go on with Fell to carry this on, is where the story increases past the Dulce base.
Mm-hmm.
Like when it starts going into the real hard-edged conspiracy theories that we see even now. So once he started getting past the Dulce story, he started talking about the idea that these underground tunnels were going to eventually be used for when the United States would slide into martial law. Once the New World Order came about, once the alien leaders revealed themselves, there would be martial law declared against the United States. Prisoners then would be put en masse underground and shuttled back and forth with these giant trains. One thing where that started leading, according to Rommel, was that children were being zipped back and forth in these giant trains. Tell me when it starts to sound familiar.
Mm-hmm.
By FEMA and these various, what they call these slave trains, these things with shackles. And so eventually this evidence that Rommel would become obsessed with, he would pass on to Phil Schneider. Phil Schneider would take this evidence. And this would start to connect Phil Schneider to the same terrorist group that helped Timothy McVeigh planned the Oklahoma City bombing. He just started to touch into that world. And if you do listen to a lot of what his stuff, it's a lot of calls for violence.
Phil does call for violence quite often.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's too bad.
Yeah. Well, Schneider also claimed that 11 of his 22 best friends had all supposedly died by suicide.
22 best friends.
11 of his 22 best friends, 66 people. It's weird that it's always like the two numbers next to each other.
Do you remember the guy used to come on the train? Hey, hello, everyone. I am not a person begging for money. All I need is $13.47 to get a ticket to Bergen, New Jersey. It's that.
Yeah. Well, I also looked up some statistics on, you know, some suicide statistics when it comes to schizophrenics. And schizophrenics are 10 times more likely to die by suicide than people without paranoid schizophrenia. And it seems like a lot of conspiracy theorists and a lot of people like Phil Schneider do have some symptoms of paranoid schizophrenia, which is why, you know, because they say, like, conspiracy theorists, like, they die by suicide all the time. Like, it's the government that's getting to them. I think it's more the case that a lot of hardcore conspiracy theorists show symptoms of paranoid schizophrenia.
And they're isolated.
And are isolated and are therefore at a much higher risk of dying by suicide than the regular population. It's not that the government's doing it. It's just, that's just how it fucking is.
And it's kind of nice. That's where Q's kind of nice. Because then you get all friends. See, that's the problem, is that once they become, once conspiracy theorists become extroverts, they show up at the White House.
Yeah. Which we don't need.
No.
No.
Stay down there. Stay down there. And you stay down there. Would you say the clinical term would be loose in the goose?
That's what January 6th was, yeah. Loose in the goose.
We are getting loose in the goose up in the
boat, ladies and gentlemen. God damn it. I don't care. Just vote for whatever.
I will literally vote for a tub of ravioli. It doesn't matter.
As long as it's blue, fucking vote. And so, after Rommel's death, Schneider cut up his security clearance card in disgust and decided to go public about Dumbs and the alien agenda with a lecture tour. But according to Phil's friend Al Bielek,
so I guess he had left-handed scissors.
This is the ultimate conspiracy. They will not allow me to destroy my connections to the CIA.
But according to Phil's friend Al Bielek, Phil only shared 1% of his total hidden knowledge before he too was killed. To wit, before his death, Schneider claimed that he had been victim of no less than 13 assassination attempts. During one attempt in September of 1995, Phil claimed that he was shot in the shoulder by an FBI agent and only survived because he returned fire. Another time, he said all the nuts from his front tires had been removed. And I think he probably wouldn't have been able to get higher than 10 miles an hour before the tires fell off.
Yeah. It's interesting because he just keeps adding to how many times he's gotten killed. And he said he's getting shot at and he's getting shot. And according to his wife, there's evidence that he got shot on his autopsy photos. But the only autopsy photos I found are the really rough ones.
They're really rough.
Yeah, but they're not even
autopsy photos. They're crime scene photos.
Yeah, they're rough. But it just kind of looks like a scar.
But because of all these alleged attempts, Phil Schneider told a friend that if it was ever said that he committed suicide, then it'll have been because he'd been murdered by the government for telling the truth.
Can I ask you this? This might be uncomfortable, but do you think that people like him and maybe like Ron Rommel, his buddy, do you think in any way that they die by suicide simply because of the effect it will have? That like a conspiracy theory's death, much like how Hunter S. Thompson took his own hands and he took it because that was his thing, right? When he wrote his suicide note, which is extremely sad, mm-hmm. but it was really just about taking control.
Yeah.
And stating your narrative. And that for him, that was like a Hunter S. Thompson thing, where something like this is like, if a conspiracy theorist really wants to make a splash,
mm-hmm.
they could essentially, if they don't maybe fully understand that you don't get to experience the splash after you're dead because you're so hyped up on it, that I wonder whether or not it seems almost attractive because it actually gives you a conspiracy theorist's end.
I don't know. I mean, it's...
Because look at how sad Alex Jones is slowly dying on the vine.
Yeah.
Well, Bill Cooper really did it right.
Yeah, but Bill Cooper got into a gun battle with a cop and died like a dog in his front yard.
Like a real piece of shit.
We all know how much cops love killing dogs. But I think, like, if you're, you know, you dedicate your life to this, you're schizophrenic, and all of a sudden you find out finally that there is no evidence to support my insanity, and then I'm going to create the evidence.
Oh,
the only
sure.
way I know how to.
I agree. I think it could be very attractive.
It's possible. I mean, it's impossible. It's also, I mean, it's, but it is at the same time impossible to speculate on someone's motives.
Of course.
For, yeah. you know, dying by suicide.
Oh,
you,
of course.
You have no idea, unless they leave a note, you have no idea why these people do this.
True. Marcus, we're just having fun.
We're just having fun speculating on
fun.
Suicide motives.
Yeah.
Well, as it worked out, Phil Schneider was indeed found dead in his Oregon apartment in January of 1996, kneeling face first in the seat of his wheelchair. According to Schneider's friend, Mark Ruffiner, Phil was assassinated because the two of them were about to talk about the possibility of maybe writing a book together about the New World Order and the alien agenda.
And Penguin was clamoring. Random House couldn't wait to get their hands on it. Time Magazine was there.
Phil's ex-wife, Cynthia, also believes Phil was murdered.
She's sad. Yeah. She makes me sad.
Likewise, a server at Phil's favorite restaurant, a truck stop diner in Aurora, Oregon, said that Phil was constantly talking about people trying to kill him because of his mission to reveal the truth.
More soup! More soup! I need a black coffee and I need noodle soup because the government, they're going to get me any... Do you have... I don't have this money. Okay. Think about it. I'm a veteran of the Dulce Wars. Peace, brother. Let's think about this.
Furthermore, some of Phil's friends said that Phil was hanging out with some unknown blonde woman just before his death.
Ooh.
After hearing this, Cynthia Schneider consulted a psychic who said that the blonde woman was actually a government agent wearing a wig, and she was involved with Phil's death along with 2 to 4 other men.
No one's running train on anyone. There's no sex happening here with one woman and 4 ufologists.
I hate to tell you this, Mr. Schneider, but... I'm not Susan.
Oh. Wait a second. Your ass is the best vagina I've ever experienced.
Additionally,
will you marry me, you big bear of a man? Will you cure me of this sadness? Please tell me you're from the government.
Well, additionally, the crime scene and Phil's autopsy were both unusual. No wounds were found on Phil's body, but mysteriously, there was blood on the floor. And that's true. I've seen the crime scene photos. There is quite a bit of blood on the floor.
It's weird.
He could have coughed it up.
He might have. But as far as the autopsy went, it was determined that Schneider had strangled himself to death with his own catheter hose. But...
I didn't even know he was in a wheelchair, much less he had a catheter.
Yeah, he had like MS. Like I think he was missing a leg, right? At that point? Because I did see in the crime scene photos that a false leg was in the background.
Yes.
The kind you put on a stump.
He had a fucked up foot. He had Chicharron foot. And then he had...
Stuck his foot in the fryer?
Well, yeah, that's what the aliens did. It's the alien. And then he did have MS. He did have multiple cancers. He did, and it's because... He was irradiated for fucking six months. Yeah.
He'd been exposed to a lot of radiation.
I really think that that's exactly what happened. And then he was, at the end of each lecture, he'd show this super heavy, can only be made by aliens metal. And then they're really kind of talking about that's kind of like a, it's kind of like a crime in a way. Where he poisoned people unbeknownst to them for many years.
That's
where
how the Holiday Inn sign turned green.
But the autopsy seemed to have been rushed, for it made no mention of his plastic sternum, the metal plate in his head, his tracheotomy, and the fact that he only had one lung, or at least the claim that he only had one lung.
I think at some point they're like, let's get through this. Because he don't look good.
He'd been dead for a week when they found him.
Yeah.
It also made no mention of Phil's bizarre genitalia. According to his ex-wife, Phil's penis had been sliced down the bottom from tip to back like a hot dog bun. This affliction was due to massive injuries and an infection that Phil had incurred while working as a construction engineer in Vietnam.
I tried to fuck a staple gun. It's not good what happened.
He sliced his own dick open.
I don't know what happened, but it...
That don't happen by accident like that.
I don't think so. No, not normally are you born a Ziploc.
Yeah, mm-mm. Unless you're climbing over razor wire naked.
Or cutting your dick open.
Yeah.
It's hard to do. I think that it's hard to accidentally do. He's a weird man.
Yep.
Strange man. Mystery. Full of mysteries.
Finally, those blood samples taken from the crime scene quickly went missing, and no further investigation was made into Phil's death.
Coincidence?
In fact, Phil's cause of death was listed in the local obituaries as a stroke, and Phil's own brother, a police officer, told the rest of his family to just accept the coroner's report and move on. And all this might have a good reason.
Basically, that there's some evidence to show that it was autoerotic asphyxiation.
His penis was filleted. How was he fucking jerking off?
He could have been poking his butthole. Eddie. You want to know?
Actually,
I really want to know.
Actually, I think Eddie might have a really good point there.
I mean, I don't know, buddy.
I think I.
They're just saying that it didn't look pretty, and that when you are choked in the manner in which he was choked, so if he was murdered, it would have made sense that the choking knot would be behind his neck, yeah. Right? And he would be garroted. There was some word that he was choked with chicken wire. He was not. One of the big, truly embarrassing factors is that he was choked by his own catheter.
Yeah.
And it's really, really gross.
It's in the photos.
Yes. Yeah. And
the knots in front.
But the thing is, the knots in front and the knots in the style of a noose-like knot, which is what they use in autoerotic asphyxiation, because you just kind of tug on it and it holds its place. You tug and it's hold. And the whole point is you're supposed to dippity dance on the very rager's head is of the scythe of the Grim Reaper so that you come big, right? And then he might have had somebody there helping that might have been the blonde woman they were probably talking about, could have maybe been some form of sex worker.
And may have been accidentally hit in the face, may have accidentally, you know, there might have been something, you know.
Something going on.
Or he died in front of her and she left.
Left. Oh, yeah. Very much so. But like what happened with John Belushi and Chris Farley and all those other fat, charming men, like Phil Schneider, who died well before
Grant
their time.
Parsons.
Yeah. But that might have been where the blood came from. Maybe the blonde woman, someone may have gotten accidentally hit in the face.
Or it could come out of your mouth.
Sort of altercation.
I do believe it could just slide out of you if you die of asphyxiation. Does this really break the bones in your neck or whatever? I'm not certain.
I have no idea.
I've never done it.
Well, breaking bones in your neck, that's usually from like strangulation with your hand, strangulation with hands, the thyoid bone. That's usually, like hand. This is more like slow strangulation.
The Epstein trigger.
Yeah. And that's the story of Phil Schneider and his alien attack.
Now, this story is, I'm really happy we finally got into the nitty gritty of this and how slick this is. But we're about to get into some real warfare.
Mm-hmm. Join us next week as we cover a near deadly Canadian alien encounter and a good old fashioned shootout down in Kentucky for Aliens Attack Part 2.
Boom! Man, love you, Phil. Miss you, buddy. Hope you're doing good out there, man.
I don't know.
Wherever you're at, Phil, I hope you're up in heaven, hanging out with Ronald Reagan and who's new there? Who just got there? Oh, yeah, Bob Newhart. Newhart. He gets to see Bob Newhart live. That is a Bob Newhart bit. That's old. That is old, but what an episode, Marcus. Good work.
Thank you very much. I did the best I could with all of this nonsense.
Wait. Well, I do think that it is important to see. I have an idea.
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, it is, you know, it is kind of a look into how, you know, paranoid schizophrenia might have, you know, because Phil Schneider is one of the architects of modern conspiracy thought. He's one of the smaller ones.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's no Bill Cooper, but he's definitely one of the guys that was...
He floats around.
He was one of those guys that gets brought up again and again. He's one of the big... Usually when people bring up Phil Schneider, it's not in context of the Dulce base. They bring up Phil Schneider as an example of, like, this is a conspiracy theorist who was suicided.
Yes.
That's what they bring up. Like, that's how they hold him up.
Yes.
As, like, a man who was suicided.
He got too close to the truth because he was saying really, then he was really, honestly, he was calling for violence.
He was asking for it. Yes, he was calling for violence constantly. He's one of those people that's always calling for violence.
He said that we needed a violent uprising in the U.S. government, and he said that it was the only thing to do it. Of course, he's only talking to a room of 70-year-olds, and none of them were ready to go. My most fringe belief, I'm starting to come across now in my mind, is that something like the Dulce Base is a perfect allegory for what is currently being revealed by the various new laws that they're trying to write in to protect whistleblowers that are coming forward with UFO information inside the U.S. government. Charles Schumer, I floated this a little bit on the UFO stream this week, but there's this new language coming out in this new law that's put together by Chuckie Schumer that's all about, you know, creating these protections for whistleblowers. But there's a couple things that are really curious. One, that the U.S. government would create protections for people that reveal that we are working with non-human intelligences both within and outside the government, and two, that we have some form of ship on hand and we're building technology off of it. And what is interesting about it is that whether that is disinformation or not, that is a little dog whistle to what they might have heard in closed doors. This idea that we might be, this rumor, this idea that we're working with a non-human intelligence. I went to a private talk with Lou Elizondo. He talked about how the proof that we're going to see maybe one day is that the concept of this is that it's way different and way weirder than we have any language for, that we don't know what it is. My idea now is that I was reading this thing about Lydia Fairchild, a woman born with two sets of DNA. She actually, it's like a whole long story. You should look into it. It's very fascinating. We found out that we don't know how often it is that human beings can be born with two whole separate lines of DNA. We actually, all of our legality systems are based upon DNA testing these days. So it's really weird. We're in this kind of weird area with it. What if there's a way that there are things walking around that look just like us and are us, but are from another dimension, but they, if you pop open the hood, they're completely different?
Yeah. Sure. Oh, man. Oh, no. Yeah, you know, if I ever commit suicide with my own catheter, just know that I did it.
And thank you, patreon.com/lastpodcast on the left. Give us money.
Yeah. If you want to see video episodes of us, that's where you can find us, at the Patreon.
Y'all, and we got BTS. We got a bunch of different shit. We got discount codes on our new show. We got the new UK merch store. We are out there, y'all.
Australia, New Zealand, we're coming, baby. Yeah. There's still some tickets, except for in Brisbane.
Yeah, Brisbane sold out. Again, we are. You go on to our socials at LP on the left and sign up if you are an Australian with a ticket to one of the Australian shows. This is the makeup for, and they say I'm sorry for the fact that it's been 4 years since we've been there, but we want you to go put the little ticket number in there, put your name and email in there, and we're going to be doing a stream just for you guys. It is July 23rd, noon 30 Australia time.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are setting all up. We're going to do an hour. You're going to come and watch us. We'll give you a little BTS of the studio, and we're going to do a Q&A, and it'll be fun as hell, won't it?
And
so buy tickets now. You can join in that, even if you didn't buy tickets then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And check out all the rest of our streams at LPNTV. That's twitch.tv/LPNTV. And you can also check out all of our streams after the fact on our YouTube channel. If you want to watch Last Stream on the Left live, you can do that on our Patreon. And if you want to see us live in all the cities we're going to be playing this year, we sold out our first London show. So be sure, if you want to see us when we come to London this October, we sold out the first London show. Make sure to buy tickets for the second London show, because that one is definitely going to sell out too. And we can't wait to see y'all out in Reykjavik. Be sure to get your tickets.
You
all
come
you,
out.
All you fucking Icelanders.
I know you guys like to buy tickets last minute, but y'all got to buy them tickets now. All right? Now you Icelanders, you get out there, you buy that ticket now.
That's right? Just how they are. It's their culture. They're going to buy it. They're going to buy it the day before.
Yeah. Don't show up with fish. Show up with money.
We want money. Hey, lamb. Also, some of that sweet, sweet Iceland weed. You know that marijuana and that beautiful lava-ridden cold rock has got to be absolutely delicious.
No, sure, you know what they have there? You know what they have there that's incredible?
Heroin.
Mushrooms.
Oh.
Their mushrooms are fantastic.
Well, hey, bring them to the show.
Yeah, I guess I'll have to stay an extra day.
Yeah.
Hail Satan.
Hail Gein.
Hail Bob Newhart.
Yeah. Bob Newhart. He didn't do anything wrong, right?
No, he's a wonderful human being.
Great.
Bye, Bob.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.